Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Happy Wednesday to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin, and here is Sean Christensen from the St. George Area Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Sean. How are you today?
I'm awesome. How are you, Andy?
I'm good. Mello is here as well. Hi, Mello.
Good morning.
Oh, she's so perky. Mm-hmm. So perky.
Yeah. Turn that down. Anyway. That's a voiceover voice if I've ever heard one.
I know. My daughter said my voice sounds like AI sometimes. I'm like, that's really
rude. Oh, that's not nice.
That might be a compliment. Although in 2025.
AI has come a long way from the year listening to, you know, the robot sounding yeah. voice. So we're getting there. Of course, Sean is with the Chamber of Commerce and has been doing that for how many years now, Sean?
About two and a half years.
2.5? Okay.
Yeah, hit 3 years this year in September.
Nice. Has it, do you feel like Chamber has changed or grown under your tutelage?
It definitely changed, mm-hmm. and I think each CEO of the chamber takes their own approach to what they feel the market needs, mm-hmm. And also it's a lot based on your experience, right? And so we focus very, very heavily on value, and I want to make sure that our members feel like they're getting value out of their membership. I want to make sure when they're attending events that they seem productive and they see them as opportunities to help grow their business and network and recognize and celebrate people in the community depending on the kind of event we're putting on. And so, yeah, we focus really heavily on value and the growth follows. So
do you feel like, so I start a new business, say I start a hot dog store, a hot dog shop, you know, where I'm cooking chili dogs and trying to make people smile by giving them a chili dog.
You pick up a J-Dog franchise over there on River Road.
No, I did my own. This is the A-Dog.
A-Dog.
I'm making it up. But anyway, what would be my, if you were to come to me and say, hey, I'm Sean with the Chamber of Commerce, I'd say, yeah, I don't really need that. What would be your argument to say, actually, you kind of do?
So first thing I would do is I would sit down and ask you what you're trying to do with the business, where your mm-hmm. biggest needs are. And, you know, in a hot dog shop, it's pretty obvious, right? Like they want to sell hot dogs. Mm-hmm. They want to fill the shop. And so the value that they would find in the chamber is there'd be name recognition. The more often that they're able to attend events or send somebody to attend those events and participate, gives them opportunities to meet more people, introduce themselves, and be able to get their name out there. They would also be able to use our newsletter to help promote their business. So we have an e-newsletter that goes out every Thursday to like 8,000 email addresses. Uh-huh. And all of our members can put content in there at no cost. It's included in their membership. And there, I think at one point there was a cost to that. We've eliminated all of that so that they can go into our, and this goes back to the value, right? It's like when you join the chamber, I want to give you as much value as you can possibly get out of that membership. So we would sit down and talk about what your needs are first and make sure that the chamber's a good fit to be able to help get you there. And what breaks my heart is when somebody joins the chamber and I never see them. Mm-hmm. And there's value in just having a chamber membership, but my utopia is that they're coming, they're active, they're part of the business community, they're able to give back to the business community as well as help grow their business all at the same time through the chamber.
So, you know, during my career, you use the word networking. Okay, well, we're talking about the internet and your server and all that stuff. But I learned a new kind of networking when I first got this job doing a morning show. And I went to Chamber and I joined the Sunshiners and I joined the Rotary Club. And everyone said, well, okay, we're going to have a half hour of networking before we get going. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Explain to people what networking is and why is it important?
Yeah, so ours is very organic. There are different methods to go about networking where mm-hmm. there's games and different things like that. Ours is very, very organic. And so before every luncheon, our luncheons will usually start at 11:30, but the program won't start till noon. And so those who want to sit down and reinforce relationships and develop new relationships and network, that's what networking is,
talking with other folks. Yeah.
then they'll show up at 11:30 and they'll sit with folks and they'll chat with them. They'll meet new members of the chamber, people who they haven't seen before. And that really is a personality thing, right? Mm-hmm. I read this really cool book and it was called Alter Egos. And it talked about how we can consciously, maybe you're not the type of person to walk in a room full of people and be like, oh man, this is awesome. I get to meet so many people today. And if you're not that person, you can create an ego or an alter ego for yourself where you flip that switch in the parking lot before you walk in. And it's a great book. It's a yellow book. It's called Alter Egos and it's fantastic. It teaches about that. But they come in and you take that opportunity to meet new people. And the best part about the chamber is it's not awkward.
I was extremely shy when I was a kid. I know people have a hard time believing that, but I can see the value in what you're talking about because you don't need to change who you are, but maybe just change, you know, for a specific situation and become, I don't know, not even a chameleon, but someone that can talk to other people. I have friends now that I made at Chamber or at Rotary Club that, you know, I had to kind of go outside of my comfort zone to get to know them, but it worked. I wanted to talk to Melody about networking, too. Now, Mello, you, as a realtor, I imagine networking is probably maybe your number one tool. Am I right?
Yeah, I make friends in the grocery store line. I make friends everywhere. I love people. I really love to talk to people. So networking events are fun, and we have some of those for real estate, too, where we have luncheons, and the half hour before you get to go around and talk to everybody, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Cool. For me personally, if I were to follow my natural tendencies, if Andy invited me to a party at his house, I would go there knowing you and your wife. And if I follow my natural tendencies, I would leave knowing you and your wife. But after reading this book, it really helped me to be able to create this networking, Sean, that I will literally sit in a parking lot and be like, okay, it's time to turn that on. And I'll actually, this sounds so weird. I can't believe it's coming out of my mouth, but I'll actually take a moment to envision what the experience is going to be like. I'm going to go in. I'm going to see people I don't know. I'm going to see groups talking of people I don't know, and I'm going to go up and join their conversation. Andy, that's everything against my personality.
I was just going to say, people think that's easy. And maybe to some people it is, but to you and I, it's not easy.
It's not easy. But if I take that time in the parking lot, it becomes very easy.
Wow.
And I just walk in, and I'll see people I don't know, and I'll just walk up, and I'll be like, hey, I'm Sean. I've never met you before. What's your name? And it's natural, and it's not awkward, and they appreciate it. Because a lot of times when people are new in a situation, and we have that a lot at the chamber, because we have a lot of members join every month, they're standing there like, oh man, I don't know anybody. This is weird. I feel out of place. And when somebody walks up and says, hey, I'm Sean, what's your name? Tell me about yourself, and just start talking to them. It creates like such a much. And so I find a lot of joy in their response to that. Right. And for me, seeing them all of a sudden like let their guard down and feel comfortable, and then I'll take them around, I'll introduce them to a few sunshiners, and then it's on like Donkey Kong after that. Our sunshiners just bring them.
If you get Fred Walker involved, it's over at that point. He's got it. Hey, I wanted to ask you, Tech Ridge, of course, you guys have partnered with them on different things. A great group up there. Have you climbed the stairs?
I've climbed the stairs.
330, Andy. You did it.
Yeah. I did it before they were legit, meaning they hadn't opened them yet. Uh-huh. It was Christmas Eve.
Really?
And wow. Yeah, so this most recent Christmas Eve, we took our family over to the Botanical Gardens. We walked through all the lights. It was beautiful. And then I said to my kids, you know, not all our kids are like at home, right? So we were all together. And I said, you should see this really cool nativity under the flying saucer up there on Tech Ridge. I don't know if Isaac appreciates me calling the flying saucer, but but we go up there, we sat down, we had a special family moment just enjoying the nativity.
Nice.
And our dogs were with us, and I said, well, come check out these stairs. So we walked all the way down to the bottom of the stairs, and then very slowly I made it back up to the... My dogs kept running to the top. They turn around, run back down, check on me, run back up to the top. If they could have spoken English, I think they'd have been like, this guy needs oxygen, get out the defibrillator. But I did make it. So, and then my wife's like, well, we should take a family photo, and I'm just sweating.
I saw somebody was thinking of alternate names for it besides the Dragon's Tail, like the Stairway to Hell, you know, and some of those, but, which I would agree with. My wife went last Sunday, so not the couple of days ago, but a week ago Sunday, and I was like, I was kind of trying to prepare. I'm like, honey, this is 333 stairs. This is a long. For example, if you climb from the bottom of what is now Greater Zion Stadium to the top, I think it's 90.
Yeah.
That's like doing that 3.5 times.
Yeah.
And I said, you sure you're ready for this? Because this is a real deal. And she's like, yeah, we got this. And she was walking with a friend of hers who had hip surgery just like a month ago. And I'm like, are you guys sure? Because this is like, you know.
It seems ill-advised.
And they're both like, it's fine. We got this. So I slept in while they were out walking and climbing the stairs. And when she came home, I'm like, well, are you sore? How are you feeling? She's like, no big deal, really.
What about her friend with the bad hip?
She said they had to go slow, but they did it. No problem.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about the speed, right? They had that race recently when they opened them up.
Yeah, they did. Some of those guys went 24 times.
Yeah. And I was watching Isaac do it. He raced a triathlete who ended significantly
he had
ahead
no
of me.
Even I had heard he had been sick, but even without him having been sick, he had no chance to beat her.
But what was awesome was he set a PR that day. So the video I saw was probably his last 10 steps. We were actually on vacation in Hawaii, so I wasn't able to be at it. Nice. So I texted Isaac and said, you know, I really apologize. I wanted to be there. And he's like, yeah, I'll watch it on social. And so, yeah, he was huffing and puffing, but he set a PR that day, so it was pretty great, yeah.
Mello, have you set a goal to go up the stairs yet?
I am going to go with Marianne Hamilton.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You know what? She could probably do it twice in the time you could.
I bet that's probably true.
She only weighs
true.
Like 17 pounds or something. She's
know.
Little.
She could fly.
It's not about weight, Andy. It's about endurance. Mm. Can you power through the pain?
I could power through any pain. That's
See?
Not a lie.
Mello's got it.
Yeah.
It's not about weight unless you weigh 300 pounds like I do. Then it is about weight. In fact, I ought to, you folks, it's easy. Put on a 300-pound pack and see how easy it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Unfortunately, I'd probably only have to put on a 60-pound pack, and I'd be there with you. So,
I did commit to my wife. I am going to do it eventually. We just haven't figured out just when yet.
You know what? Let me know when you're going. I'll reach out, and we'll get the sheriff's department search and rescue on call.
One of those defibrillators at the top. And
we'll have a paramedic up at the top. We can get the fire department there.
Well, the person that was wanting to rebrand it as Stairway to Hell or Devil Steps or whatever, they said, here's the key. If you really want to do the stairs, park at the top, go down. Going down is hard, but not that hard. And then if you want to go home, you got to go back to your car.
Yeah, it's true.
So that's the real key. Don't park at the bottom because you'll, yeah.
A caller just called in and said, are you going to build an urgent care at the top for people?
You know what's funny, Mello? I had lunch with TechRidge yesterday, funny enough. And they're talking about what amenities to put up at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
Everything from bathrooms to parking lot and all sorts of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So let me just give a thought that I've had recently on the development of TechRidge. You know, a lot of times as we see these developments go up, you'll watch the buildings go up first and then the amenities come after, right? Once the money's in the bank.
Sure.
What's incredible about what they're doing up at TechRidge is that, yes, there are buildings up there, but there are so many more to come. Yet they haven't waited on that investment in amenities until the buildings are up. They're building them now, right? So they just finished those stairs, like $1 million project, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now they're finishing. I mean, could you imagine paying $1 million for stairs, Andy?
No.
It's unbelievable. But it's the investment they're making in the community.
It was a $1 million project?
Yeah. Stairs. Yeah. And so those stairs are in now. Now they're building a track all the way around the rim.
Right.
And
right.
That'll be a 5K, you know? And so they're putting all this stuff in, and they're getting ready. It should be very quickly. They'll be breaking ground on three new buildings. One of them, McCray Hepler will have one of those buildings for Eagle Gate Title.
Really?
One of them will be
his.
Way
to go, McCray.
Actually, building number three is what it'll be called. But, yeah, they'll be breaking ground on those buildings soon. But I think it's incredible that Isaac and his team at Tech Ridge have that vision and really have shown that they're very community oriented. Yep. And if you go look at those stairs in the morning or at night, you can tell how community oriented they're packed.
Yeah.
But they made them wide enough that they can't be packed and it doesn't feel packed.
If you had to, yeah.
It's like 10 feet.
Yeah.
10
yeah.
feet across on those stairs.
Are there handrails on both sides?
Just in the middle.
Only in the middle.
Yeah. And lit. So those handrails are all lit. Yeah. Cool. So.
Somebody asked me the other day, now Tech Ridge, that's a private development. Somebody bought it. It's not public. Mm-mm. But they are, from what I have heard, they're giving the stairs to the city to maintain, correct? Is that how that works?
I don't have an answer for you on that.
Okay. I think that's what, it seemed like the mayor or somebody said that.
Okay.
That they paid for it, they built it, but then now they're going to give it to the city for public use, obviously,
yeah.
and to maintain. So.
Yeah, and the city actually started on the new roadway going up there as well.
Nice.
So that just started roadway, like in the last week and a half or something like that. So.
And you mentioned the race, the Dragon's Tail race, and some of those folks, they had the sprint, and then they also had the endurance, and some of them did it 24 times. By the way, I don't know if you knew this. After their 23rd lap, they sprinted the 24th lap. Can you imagine? Okay, do the math here. 24 times 333 is, 23 times, we're over 6,000 steps in, maybe 7,000, and then they sprint the last one.
Yeah, that's not Sean.
No.
That's
Sean
showing off.
No. Maybe down. I could sprint down. I got gravity on my side.
I was going to say, I could get down really fast, just trip.
Just roll.
Yeah. We're talking with Sean Christensen, Chamber, St. George Area Chamber of Commerce. You guys have, let's talk about today first. You got a training luncheon today?
Yeah, so we switched our structure this year, and we've always provided training luncheons. At the end of last year, we planned out all of 2025, and so now what we refer to as our power lunch. It happens the third Wednesday of each month. In our power lunches, they build on each other. So last month, we had an expert, Brad Harker, come in, and he trained on how to develop your value proposition. Mm. This month, I am training on developing a sales process. My background, I ran sales training and sales recruiting for Hearst newspapers for the entire country. And so I'm going to take some of that expertise that I developed over the years and share that with folks about how to develop a sales process.
Nice.
At the end of each of these lunches, people leave with a book or a gift card to buy a book. So today, last month, we gave them a book on how to develop your value proposition. This month, I'm going to give everybody Amazon gift cards because there's so many sales books, and each sales book, some are better for B2C, some are better for B2B, business-to-business sales, business-to-consumer sales. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they continue their learning after the fact. So we actually took these lunches are a little more expensive. They're $40 for the lunch, but you're guaranteed an expert to train. You're guaranteed reading material after. And our focus there, again, is on value. Like, elevate the experience. Let's help businesses be better at business in Southern Utah using the experts we have here locally.
So first Wednesday is new member luncheon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second Wednesday is
Bills, Rights, and Bites. That's our policy lunch with Intermountain.
All right. Third Wednesday is your power lunches, right?
That's correct.
And then what about fourth Wednesday?
It just depends. Fourth Wednesday, a lot of times we'll have previews about upcoming events. So it might be the Ironman. It could be the PGA. It could be the LPGA. It could be the St. George Marathon. And mm-hmm. so these are to help businesses prepare for these events and be able to maximize all this business that comes into town while these events happen. So that's a lot of times on a fourth Wednesday.
Every once in a while, there's a fifth Wednesday. Is that
we nap that day.
Eat and nap. I like that. Kindergarten. And then you have
on the fifth day, on the fifth Wednesday they rested.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I like
that. You have a big event coming up as well. Tell us about it.
We do. We have our Element Awards. So we just announced yesterday our winners of our Element Award. There are three winners.
Nice.
And
they are.
These are women in business. Yeah, I can.
Oh, you
can. We published yesterday, and so it's a Women in Business Award. Women who are impacting the economy and leading here in Washington County. Mm-hmm. So they have to be in a business in Washington County in order to be nominated. We had over 40 nominations that were in consideration, and our winners this year are Colette Cox from the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, and then we have Jill Hunt, who runs an ad company called Buddy Mail. Yeah. She's fantastic. All of these women are incredible. And then Natalie Britt from, she's the CEO of the Forever Zion Project. Mm. And so they run all of the retail for Zion and then utilize those funds to help support Zion National Park and make sure that it'll be around for generations to come. And so these, all three of these women are doing incredible things in different spaces. I mean, mm-hmm. the amount of grant funds that Colette's been able to bring to Washington County since taking over the role have been incredible. Jill Hunt's a small business owner, does it on her own, total fireball, yeah. and just incredible woman. And then Natalie Britt is in the nonprofit space, making an impact on our economy through what they do at the Forever Zion Project. And so it's just incredible women that we're going to take an opportunity to honor. We're going to announce our keynote speaker soon. Tickets are on sale now. And yeah.
And when is the event?
It is on Thursday, March 27th. It'll be at Black Desert Resort. They are our presenting sponsor. Very cool. If you know Patrick and his team over there, they are huge into sponsoring the promotion of women. And in business, in the LPGA, everything. I could go on and on about what they're doing for the LPGA to make sure that this becomes the LPGA's premier event. It's incredible.
I got out to Black Desert for the first time during the Travel Expo with Morris Columbus, and it was amazing. It was just an incredible place.
Yeah, it's a tremendous experience.
It's still under construction, basically. It's still in transit. So.
And it will be for some time. They've got a lot that'll go. There's residential, commercial. There's a lot still to be done out there.
Anything else before we go to weather break?
Just thanks for having me on the show. Mello, it's great to meet you. Thank you for being so kind and inviting.
Always a pleasure, Sean. Sean Christensen, St. George Area Chamber of Commerce. Best way to get a hold of you if I wanted to join the chamber.
stgeorgechamber.com. Go there. Contact information is there. You can find everything on our website.
Very cool. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, brother.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the show. Sean Christensen went his own way. David Romer is in the house now. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Thanks for coming in. Mello is still with us, though. Mello stayed around. Hi, Mello.
Hi.
David works for Modern Warriors. David is a Modern Warrior. And David is we call him a firearms expert, a former firearms trainer, right? And
did some training in the Marines. So,
and I just feel there are not too many people in this town smarter than David when it comes to firearms. And
that might be a stretch, but
come on, man.
That's all right. I'll take it when I can get it. How about that?
how long have you been working over there at Modern Warrior?
It's been about 4.5 years, okay, more or less now. Okay. So.
And you've been in St. George about 4.5 years, or was it?
Let's see. It's been what, 7?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
6.5, 7 years now.
Glad you're here. So. Glad you're here.
Yeah, us too. It's
great,
wonderful.
Great place to live, isn't it?
It is.
Even though maybe a few more violent crimes happen than used to in this town, for the most part, this is a pretty cool place. I always tell the story when we moved here, my wife and I moved here in 92, 93, right in there. Mm-hmm. And I was a young sports writer and I was, you know, sports broadcaster and writer. I was going to work my way up the ladder and I got job offers from bigger papers. And every time an offer would come in, I'd say, honey, what do you think? And she said, well, you can go if you want to, but I'm staying here.
That's right.
Maybe I'll stay with her.
I guess I'll stay.
And then we raised 5 kids in this town. So pretty happy about that.
It's a great place. It's a great place.
Wanted to talk today, while Mello's here, a little bit about women and firearms, women and handguns. And Dave, how often do you, before we bring Mello in on this, how often, Dave, do you have women come in looking to buy a gun, looking to maybe have questions answered about a gun they already have or mm-hmm. about the firearm topics? Is that a common thing at Modern Warriors?
It is, actually. And it's getting more common, which is great. We were talking a little bit before we got on. You know, the gun culture in general for quite a while now has been very, I mean, it's still male dominated, but it's very male centric, and it's been there's been a heavy emphasis on like the super gung ho, very in your face, very aggressive mentality all the time, which for new people and for women both just doesn't do well. Yeah. It's fine if that's your personality and you want to do stuff like that, but having other options, you know, that are definitely a little more reasonable, a little more day-to-day, a little more approachable is a good thing. And I think the instructors that we contract out, we don't have any internal. The local instructors that we contract out are really good about that. They're like normal people.
One of them's a
anyone can go talk to them. Yeah. Tammy Popke. Yeah. She does our women's handgun class, actually, which is one of our most popular classes, actually. And it sells out super fast all the time.
Wow.
Nice. They do cap it at 8 people. But she comes in, her husband John will come in as the aggressor and help her a lot, for their scenario based stuff. But,
that's cool.
But yeah, she brings all sorts of different stuff. So you can get different feels for different platforms, different sizes. She can talk about different methods for carry. They go over some scenario based things and, it's a really cool class. There's no actual live fire in it. It's all in the classroom, but it goes for a few hours and it's been really, really popular.
Let me say the classic scene in the movie is, you know, there's a bad guy and he's killing people and he's doing stuff, and the woman finally gets the guts to pull the gun out of her purse, and she's shaking like crazy, and the bad guy walks up to her and says, "You're not going to shoot me. I know you're not going to shoot me. Hand me the gun."
And just takes it out of her hands.
He gets closer nothing. And closer, yep. And then takes the gun away from her. I know that's got to be
a movie
lot of,
right there.
Yeah, that's a movie. And it's got to be a lot of women's nightmares, because they see the movies and they see that and they go, yeah, that probably would happen to me too. Is there a point where you can help get the woman past what they see in the movies to reality?
Yeah, I mean, with all of that, you've got just comfort and mindset is kind of where it comes from. And comfort being kind of a multifaceted thing. One, it's comfort being around them, not being scared of them. But it's also having the understanding them enough to be comfortable around them in various conditions, but also having comfort in yourself to implement that, which comes from training and knowledge transfer in that sense. So if you can become proficient with your gun, you're going to be a lot more comfortable with it in how you use it. You know, I've seen people, even just paper targets, right? I've seen people out there and like they don't even want to pull the trigger because they're scared they're not going to hit it, and then they're not comfortable with that. Hmm. It's like there's no threat there. That's a piece of paper. It's okay. Even if you miss it, that's why we're here to get better. That's fine, yeah. Right? We're not going to sit here and laugh in your face because you missed the target, right? We're here to develop some skills. So, yeah. It's okay to miss, but even that, it's like you can see them starting to lock up already. Like, I don't want to shoot it because, you know, what if I miss? It's like, well. Improvements. You gotta miss to get better. So,
Mello, how comfortable are you with a gun? I mean, if someone put a handgun in your hand and said, "Okay, hit that target over there," how do you, never mind the accuracy. How comfortable would you be?
It's intimidating. I've gone to the ranges and shot. It's been many years, and it's a little intimidating because it's not even that. It's so loud too. Like when you shoot it, that
was my wife's number one complaint. Yep. Was the noise.
Especially indoor ranges. That's a big issue because it just reverberates all that around you, which people don't think about.
Yeah, it's intimidating. And then, like, I know you're supposed to hold your finger straight across the gun and not, like, on the trigger when you're not ready to shoot it. There's, like, certain rules that I learned, but I haven't done it in decades, so I don't even know if I'd know what to do. So if you handed me a gun and there was somebody coming and my child was right next to me, I think I would shoot them. I'd probably miss because I'd probably close my eyes. But I think if I went to the range and practiced, I would be more confident. But it is intimidating. And I think my husband said we have a small 9mm and a small 22mm.
Okay.
But I haven't seen them in years, so I don't even know like what they even look like or how big that would be in my hand.
Right, right. And that is a factor. I mean, obviously all of us are different physically. I've got pretty average hands, so you know, I can sympathize with some of the people on some of these platforms, but you know, you'll see people with really small hands, or they might have an injury or something like that, and getting something the gun itself might manage recoil really well because it's big and heavy, but if you can't grip it, that doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. That's still going to be a problem, and it hurts your confidence.
Yeah,
if you feel like you can barely hold this thing, how are you supposed to shoot it? Mm-hmm. But the converse to that is if you get really, really small guns, they don't manage recoil well.
What does that mean, manage recoil? They bounce back harder?
Mm-hmm. Right. So you're going to get more recoil in your hand that you're going to feel. You're going to see more muzzle rise. Mm. So the more non-reciprocating mass that you have in that gun, the less felt recoil you'll have unless you start bumping calibers up. So like a really small pocket 9mm is going to recoil a ton harder than like a full-size competition 9mm will. Now, your environment might dictate what you can carry, right? Ideally, you'd have a full-bore competition 9mm gun, you know, for when something goes bad because it has basically no recoil and it's like shooting a rifle almost. However, how are you going to carry that? Is it going to be reliable? Right? Like, that doesn't really work. So it's finding the balance between the two for you. And again, everyone's going to be different on that. I've gotten used to carrying a lot of weight and a lot of bigger guns. So for me now, I can carry a full-size gun. That's fine. But even for guys my size or bigger, if you're not used to carrying or depending on how you dress, that still might not be an option. So but it's finding that line for you.
That's a question I have for you, is for women, like, sure, I want to carry a gun for safety, right? But where do I put it, and how reasonable is that to be accessible? Because if you've seen a lot of women's purses, there's a lot more things than just a gun in there.
Yes, there are. and that conundrum is a tough one for a lot of the guys. And being male-dominated, that's part of, I think, the... not intentional, but the sort of the gatekeeping aspect to women coming in, is because you come in, it's like, well, I'm wearing a dress, how am I supposed to carry it? I'm like, well, I don't know. I haven't worn a dress, so
yeah.
That's actually a good question. I was going to say the belt, but that's not going to work.
No.
I know a lot of women do carry in purses. That is very common. There's obviously some other complexities to that you need to be aware of. If you're not aware of someone sneaking up on you and they try to rob you, more than likely they're not trying to cause you harm. They're trying to steal your purse.
Mm.
If you have a gun in there, that could be an issue.
Yeah.
you don't really want your gun stolen. That can be a problem. Sometimes that's still the best option, though, right? And for guys, it's easy, right? I have a belt on literally every day.
Mm-hmm.
If I leave the house, I have a belt on. This is pretty easy for me. I can just clip a holster on the inside of my pants on my belt, and I'm done.
Right.
You might have a belt today. You might not tomorrow. You might not even have something to drape tomorrow.
Exactly.
They do make things called belly bands.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of elastic and Velcro. They go around your stomach, so it kind of simulates having a belt, but you don't need an actual waistband. Those are pretty popular with women. I know there's.
I was just going to say, I actually use that, one of those, but and I'm not a woman, but they work.
No, they do work. They do work. They can be hot in the summer. Obviously. Mm-hmm. There's a company, I think it's called Flashbang Holsters, I think is the name of the company. But they actually make one that's specifically designed to like clip into your bra.
Mm.
And so obviously you're going to be limited on gun size if you're going to do that.
Depending on your size.
I don't know how the sizing works.
We're not going to go there.
But yes, it's designed to be under there. So you actually would reach under your shirt, go up, and then you pull down from your bra. And that's how it actually comes out of the holster. Which is just another option. You've got ankle carry. You can get like the thigh straps that go underneath your dress and stuff. There are a bunch of options out there, and as more and more women are getting into it, they're becoming more prevalent. But how you dress and the things you do are going to dictate that.
Right. But another concern with that, like even putting it in your purse or somewhere on your person, is what about children?
Absolutely.
But we maybe do that after the break. I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's get a commercial break in. When we come back, we'll talk about that. And the other thing, you know, earlier I talked about the movie. Would a woman be able to, most women are so kind and empathetic, would they be able to pull the trigger? I think Dave hinted on some of the ways to maybe overcome that, and it has to do with practice, familiarity, training, et cetera. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the show, 949 on KDXU. David Romer is with me, a Modern Warrior. He works for Modern Warriors, which we have not mentioned the location. It's worth mentioning right now, Dave.
Yeah, so we're off exit 4 from I-15, the Bloomington exit. We're the opposite side of the interstate from Walmart, and we're back behind the La Quinta and the Pilot back there, directly next door to Appliance Wholesalers Plus.
Yeah, AWP, big high school sports sponsor over there. And of course, Modern Warriors, great sponsor here on KDXU, and always a pleasure to have Dave with us. Also, Mello is
fun
here.
To be here.
Hello, thanks for being here,
thank
too.
Thank you.
Okay, first of all, before we get into the children thing, I had talked about the movies and the women are afraid to shoot, but you had touched on a little bit. To me, it seems like it's about comfort and training, not, you know, do I have the guts to shoot somebody? If your life is in danger, anyone will have the guts to try to shoot. So then it comes down to, are you comfortable with the gun? Do you feel like that you could hit the target? Because the last thing you want to do if someone's coming at you is miss. You know, if they're 20 feet away, you can cover 20 feet in a split second.
Very quickly,
you've got to be able to
21-foot rule. Yep.
So I'm guessing, Dave, that really training and being comfortable with a gun are really important for a woman with a handgun.
For everyone, yeah, doing the training, that's going to build your confidence in yourself and your comfort with the platform. And the more you have training, the less you're thinking about all the minutiae and the little details, right? For those of us who have played sports growing up and all that, when you're first learning fundamentals, you got to really think about it. You go game time, you're trying to do it, you're doing stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, the pressure's on, it's everywhere. Once you get a little more proficient, though, I mean, I played soccer, so, like, you've got a ball flying in, you got to trap this thing. Like, you don't think about the mechanics of trapping that ball, right? It comes in, and your reflex goes, and you're already looking for where you're going, and it just happens. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens with firearms. Like, the more you train, the more you build that. You're not sitting there consciously thinking, oh, gosh, okay, is my finger on the outside of the trigger right now? Okay, at this point, I'm allowed to go in. When's that safety coming off? How do I line up? You don't think about it, any of that. It's,
right. Oh,
okay, yeah, I'm in a safe position, okay. It's time to shoot. Okay, I'm on line. Good. Right?
Yeah.
So you're not thinking about all the little details, which are the last things you need to be thinking about in a life and death scenario, right. Is all those little minutiae. That's not the time and place to figure that out. There is a level of mindset to that. I know I've had this discussion with my wife in the past, you know, it was important in the military, too. It was something we harped on all the time, building that mindset of when what that line is for you. For when you're willing to pull that trigger, right? Mm-hmm. There's obviously a legal line, but then there's also a internal moral line, right?
Sure.
And like I've had before we had kids, my wife was pretty open. She's like, I mean, if someone's in here and they start attacking me, you're not home, like, I probably won't shoot them.
What? Like,
really? It's like, yeah, it just doesn't feel right to
I'd rather die than have someone.
It seems
kind
of weird. Now, that changed pretty drastically once kids were involved, right?
Yeah.
Like, somebody comes in, my kids are home, is like, I'll drop them.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, okay. That's fair.
It's true.
Yeah. But yeah, there's just like this weird, and you know, everyone's different, right? I'm not saying she's wrong or she's a lunatic or anything like that, but you know, there wasn't this, you know, is it, for her, it was hard to sit there and say, I'm willing to take someone's life when they may or may, like, what if they're not going to kill me? It didn't seem like an even equation, I guess, is the best way I could kind of decipher that. And it's, I mean, I could see how you get there, sure. I'm not there. but I can see how you get there, right? And finding that line for everyone, because it is something you're going to have to live with, right? If that happens and you end up having to shoot and kill somebody, you survive that, but that also means you survive that, right? You're going to live with that decision, and you're going to keep rethinking it and going over and over and over again.
So do you teach people to, like, maybe not go for the kill shot? Like, maybe take out a leg or an arm or slow them down so you can get away?
Personally, no.
No,
I don't. There are some things that you can do in terms of, like, pelvis shots, which no longer being taught in the military. It used to be a thing. It's not anymore. But you can do things like that where it's not a decision of an individual in order to continue their actions, and you are stopping them without killing them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about having to be very precise in moments in kind of weirder areas. So if I aim center mass, right, if I'm just shooting wild and I aim center mass, I'm probably going to be hitting you pretty good, even if I'm not hitting you in the heart.
Yeah.
I'm still hitting your arms, your shoulders, your stomach. Like, those are pretty brutal shots. Those are going to cause some damage, and if you have any relevance of a right mind, you're going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
If I start shooting at your legs and I'm not hitting my exact target, I'm hitting your floor.
Oh, and you could hurt somebody else.
And then I'm not, it could over-penetrate, it could go to the floor, it could do something like that. It also, if there's no one else around, it's a concrete floor, I'm hitting the floor. That means I'm not hitting you, right? So you're not... You, in terms of fear, you might be dissuaded, but nothing else, right? There is no physical stopping you there, and there's no pain stopping you. There's nothing like that. You run into this other problem. There's also something called the 21-foot rule. So people don't realize how quickly people close gaps. But it's pretty commonly understood these days in the firearms community, but it started with knives, right? So the idea was, okay, if somebody is threatening you with a knife, how far away do they need to be for you to be able to draw your gun from concealment and shoot them before they can get to you?
Hmm.
Right? And the mindset is like, man, I can draw pretty fast.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
He's on the other side of the room. I'm good. Like, I've got this guy. Well, they started doing this, like, drills and testing with this. And they figured out pretty quick, even guys that can draw pretty fast, that is not a given, right? So the time that it takes for an individual to close that gap from 21 feet is typically faster than you can draw and get a shot on target.
Wow. Mm. Wow. It's actually kind of sobering.
It is, isn't it? Because you would think, man, we're over an arm's distance, I'm good. It's like, no, reactionary gap is a real thing, and it's physical, and it's something you need to think about because it's a lot bigger than you might think. And so having that gap in time is really what you're talking about, but in this instance, it would be space is what dictates that time because it's an impact weapon. But 21 yeah. feet's pretty far, especially in a structure, right? You're mm-hmm. probably not in the same room. You're down a hallway. You might not even see them at that point. So by the time they're around the corner,
true.
You're pretty close. So you're reacting really fast. Even if you already have your gun out, that's a very fast reaction to start popping rounds off. And you've got to be accurate with it. So you don't have time to be missing like crazy.
Okay, in less than 3 minutes, Mello had a question about kids and safety and guns.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
Remind me of that question.
Oh, so what do you do, like, if you're putting your gun in your purse, your child could access that. Like, what are mm-hmm. some things you can do to protect your children if you decide to carry a gun, like, in your purse or on your person?
Yes. So the way I try to word this, because it's everyone's situation is different. I obviously just carry on body, so mine's a little different. If my gun's on me, it's in a holster, in my pants, it's in my workspace where I can see it. Like, no one's grabbing that, including my kids. It mm-hmm. is well protected. That trigger's protected. In your purse or in a backpack is a different ordeal. It is a responsibility mm-hmm. as a gun owner, if you're going to carry one around, to have that in a safe condition. When I say that, I mean, if you're out and you're at daycare, you're picking up your kids or something, right, and you have a gun in your purse, you can't just set that purse down and walk over and pick up your kid. That is no longer a safe condition, right? Mm. And so that it's being mindful of things like that. If you have it, you go to the grocery, you put it in your grocery cart, and then you leave your cart there and you walk 10 paces over to grab something off the shelf and come back, you've no longer left that gun in a safe condition. Anybody can grab that. Do they know it's in there? No, they don't, more than likely. But how long does it take? Like, if your kid's sitting in the cart, too, and they know that's in there, how long would it take them to grab that while you're grabbing that mm-hmm. can of beans?
True.
Good point. Would you recommend someone that kept their gun in a purse and maybe not chambered or not loaded? Or
It's certainly an option. I am not a big fan of not being chambered, but your situation might dictate for a safety reason for a kid. I would definitely think about it pretty hard if I was carrying in a backpack or a purse, especially with kids. Because, again, that can happen extremely quickly. Something out of there while your back's turned and, like, mm-hmm. not even anything malicious, you know, just curiosity. And that's the more steps you can put in place to prevent anything from happening before you can recognize that, the better. But, again, that's that other aspect of if that's in that bag is on my body.
Got you. So it's probably better to find a way to carry on your person if you choose to carry as a woman.
The best way is to carry on person because, yes, it's always, from a security perspective, it's always contained and protected, right? But a bag, we often leave them around. We're very frivolous in that sense with bags. We have a lot of thoughts on security in our town, which is great, that it's pretty safe. But we're also a little too forgiving on some of that, I think. But
we're out of time, guys.
Oh,
thank
man.
You so much for participating. Good. No thank Mello, thanks for your question
thank
today.
You.
This is the Andy Griffin Show. We'll talk to you later.
All right.